Bonjour, and welcome to Foreplay Matters, because it matters. I'm Madame Wee, and today is our last episode of the season, and I have a special guest with me. I would like to inform our followers that Madame Boku will not be joining us today. So we're going to end this season with a special episode and a special guest, Emmanuel Taylor. Hi, Emmanuel.
Hey, welcome. I'm glad to be back again. It's good to be back on the show one more time.
Yes, I'm glad to have you back. So we're going to be talking about polyamory, and a lot of people are curious about this, and those that are not curious about it, I would like to educate them on polyamory and poly lifestyle, polyamorous, and people are like, oh, you're weird, why do you want to be in multiple relationships? And especially in our community and our culture, Black females tend to be very territorial, obsessive, possessive, and so forth. And so therefore, I wanted to introduce this to our followers. So what do you think about the subject?
Well, I am polyamorous. I personally practice ethical non-monogamy. And so as somebody who is polyamorous, I don't necessarily think that it's weird. but I do recognize that it is a bit different from the norm. And it's something that, many people can relate to in some way. And a lot of people within our communities don't relate to it at all. So I think what's important for me is that, for people who do naturally tend towards multiple loving relationships, that they're able to feel a sense of validation in themselves, self-acceptance. And it's also important to me that, within our community, that we show compassion for people who have different ways of participating in consensual, loving relationships between adults.
I agree. I agree. And the fact that you said consensual, loving relationships between adults. So can you explain to our Foreplay Matter followers what polyamory is? What does that mean?
Sure. So polyamory is a term which generally refers to people who choose to participate in multiple romantic relationships. And the caveat here is that they do so with the full knowledge and the openness and awareness of everybody who's involved. All right. So another term which is used to describe this is ethical non-monogamy. So the idea that people can practice a form of relating that's different from monogamy, but is ethical, right? It takes into account the full knowledge and the awareness of everybody who participates. And, a big sort of a factor in this is the idea of agency, right? That everybody has the ability to choose, what relationship they want to be in. So everyone has full knowledge, full awareness, and they're choosing to be in relationships like this.
And I think that is so beautiful. And the reason why I say that is because people, especially, they're like, why would you want to share? The first thing you hear out of someone's mouth is, I have a problem with sharing my man or sharing my woman or something like that. However, having the full knowledge, I explain to my girlfriends when I talk to them about this, when we're having our kind of wind down Wednesday or whenever, that most relationships are in a polyamorous relationship. However, it's involuntary, right? So people cheat, yeah. Right? So I explain to them, they're like, oh, I would never be involved in this type of relationship. And I'm like, the beautiful thing about this is, like you said, full knowledge, the openness, and the communication that happens. There's no cheating. And they looked at it like, no, it's cheating. I'm like, no, it's not, because everybody's in agreement. Everybody's fully aware of what's going on. However, your man may be cheating on you, so it's involuntary. Wouldn't you want to be in a relationship that's open and not no betrayal happening?
Yeah, and when things take place in secret, then that's when people's, you know, health and safety are put into risk, you know, in a number of different ways, from, you know, sexually transmitted diseases and infections, from, you know, anger and jealousy and violence, you know, when people find out about crazy things that are going on behind their back, right? So there are lots of things that occur, you know, in the dark, and when they come to light, it's usually not, you know, in the prettiest way, right?
Right.
But the idea of being ethical in our interactions means that we can, you know, deal with our emotions up front. You know, we can confront our personal insecurities. We can better define what it is that we want and we need out of our relationships. And, you know, and if we communicate those things, then we can have relationships that are really satisfying. In fact, I think that a lot of the principles of polyamory, or a lot of the practices that I see people apply within polyamorous relationships, really benefit everyone, even people who are monogamous. You know, just having
right.
openness and communication and free dialogue about what it is that we want and need out of our relationships, it's helpful in general.
Yes, yes. And I want to get into some of those things that you just said. But first, I want you to, if you can, talk about the difference between polyamorous and polygamy. Because people are like, oh, it's polygamy. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's a difference.
Gotcha. Yeah. So polygamy is an umbrella term, which basically means many spouses. And so, you know, polygamy would refer to a culture that allows one person to be married to more than one person, more than one other person, right?
Right.
And so polygamy, you know, has different flavors to it. You know, so polygyny is probably the most, definitely the most popular form of polygamy through history and culture that we know of.
Right.
Basically men having multiple wives.
Right.
So this is something that we've seen, you know, in traditional African cultures. This is something that we've seen in traditional Islamic cultures and many different societies throughout history, right?
Right.
Polyandry is basically a situation wherein a woman is legally permitted to have multiple husbands, right? So
right.
it's the opposite of polygyny. And polyandry actually has a long history as well in different cultures around the world, some still existing to this day. And often,
please tell me where that's at. Second one, just joking. Please tell me where that's at. Okay.
Yeah, there are a couple indigenous societies still here on planet Earth in 2020 that practice polyandry. And a lot of times, this is found in, they say historically, it's been found in situations where population needed to be controlled. And so, you know, when more than one husband is married to one woman, you know, it basically, you know, it limits the number of children that can be born. When men have multiple wives, then, you know, there's lots of women who can be given birth all the time. But when the men, you know, when there's only a 9-month window to be able to have kids and only one man can impregnate a woman, the population tends to go down. So now that's not saying that that's the only reason why, you know, polyandry could exist, you know, but as a social structure, as a part of society, that's something that has been seen in the past. But there are many reasons why, you know, a woman can decide to take on many husbands and population doesn't have to have anything to do with it at all.
Right. And then pretty much what you had stated, the reason why there is a difference between polyamorous and polygamy is because polyamorous is it's nothing about the spouse and the marriage, which kind of makes the difference. It's pretty much just multiple romantic relationships, correct?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and so to give the other side too, even with polygyny, right, you know, it's that had more to do with ownership over property and not seeing women as human beings, right? So I want to be fair in sort of presenting both sides of the coin. It's not that traditional marriage provided a lot of benefits to women or anything like that, you know, in most cases. But yeah, but both polygyny and polyandry had to do with legal constructs, marriage as a social construct inside of a society, right? And polyamory doesn't. Polyamory does not, you know, require that people are married or that people have spouses. It's about
having multiple romantic relationships in general,
right.
whether or not those are, you know, so it could be somebody who is married, who has, you know, additional partners outside of their marriage. It could be people who aren't married at all.
Right. Right. So how did you get into this?
So, you know,
because I'm sure you didn't. How did you come to discover that you wanted to be in this type of relationship?
Yeah, so, you know, when I look back over my life, I see evidence for the fact that I've always been polyamorous, right? I've had, you know, just different situations in which, like, you know, I'd fall in love with two people, you know, and the conventional wisdom and the culture told me that I had to choose. And
right.
it's heartbreaking to have to do so, you know, but I did the thing that I thought was right, you know, and I actually wound up getting married when I was fairly young, you know, and eventually that led to divorce. But even while I was married, you know, I didn't cheat on my wife while I was married, but I did find myself, you know, developing interest in other people and always stopping myself from, you know, pursuing these other relationships because it was wrong, you know.
Right.
So after my divorce, it gave me a time to really, you know, reflect on myself and what it is that truly made me happy. And it wasn't until I read a book called Sex at Dawn that I found a language to describe what I had been feeling most of my life. And there were words, there was a taxonomy, and it really helped me to say, oh my gosh, this is that thing that I know to be true within myself. You know, even when I was married, there were times I talked to my wife, I'd say, you know, I met somebody, you know, say on a business trip or something like that, and we could have had sex, and I know that it would not have had any effect on our relationship. I would have still came home, I would have loved you, we could have used protection, I could have got tested. I don't see why this is wrong. Now, you know, I know that you're not comfortable with it, so I'm not going to do this, but, you know, I don't understand why this is wrong. Why do we think that this is something that's wrong? So we would have these conversations, but it really didn't lead to any change in our marriage or our relationship. But later on, when I started to read, I found that there were resources. This was a shared experience, you know, within humanity, and other people had, you know, been writing about this and documenting their experiences, and there were online groups, and there was a whole worldwide community of people
right.
who had been sharing knowledge about this. And, you know, as I opened up my eyes and I read more and I did more research, you know, eventually I came to the point of, you know, accepting for myself that I was willing to try to be actively polyamorous and to try to manage multiple relationships and see how it worked out.
But I like the fact that you had the courage to come home and have that conversation with your wife, with your spouse at the time. Most men don't do that. Most men will keep that to themselves.
Yeah, and, you know, it's what I didn't want to do was, you know, just mess things up, essentially. You know, I had been raised in a pretty religious setting, you know, grew up in the church kind of thing, and had these ideas of what it meant to be successful as a man, you know, to be a head of household, to be a husband, to be a father, you know. And so for when I was younger, like, that was my vision for what my future was supposed to be, you know. And it took a long time to challenge that and to sort of define for myself what it is that I wanted life to look like. You know, and so as I became more open-minded, it gave me some courage to challenge different things. And I'm glad that I did. It's led to a much more rewarding life.
I love that. So it's like you have taken the time to figure out what your happiness is and actually to move towards achieving that. And that's what people don't understand. Polyamory, it has the word amour in it. Amour is love, you know, and that's just, so pretty much all it is many loves. And who's to say that we have to love one person? And the fact that she said that you're religious, you grew up in the church, it doesn't say that we have to love one person, right?
No. I mean, even in the Bible, like, polygyny was very common, you know, throughout the Old Testament, you know. Not that I'm necessarily still looking back, you know, at the Old Testament and the Bible for guidance on my ethics, but some crazy stuff used to happen back then, you know. But yeah, like having many wives was really common. And it's been common in many different cultures as well. So, no, it definitely wasn't forbidden. And the fact is, having many loves is actually really natural for people, just like having many people that we hate is natural, right? We all love multiple people. We just are we've our society and our cultural expectations condition us to only express love romantically with one person. So that's it. It's not that we don't love multiple people. People have multiple kids and they love them. And they can love multiple cousins. They can love multiple friends. But they just we're conditioned to only express that love romantically, with one person. So it has more to do with the social conditioning than it does with our capacity as people to express and to share love.
Well, and you bring up a good point. It's like it's natural. And so therefore it's like, okay, you have multiple partners, oh, you have this, then we start to be our society starts to label, oh, you're a sex addict, oh, you're a nymph, or it starts to put this kind of negative black cloud over your sexuality and making us feel like something's wrong with us when this is a natural feeling.
I would say that there's a couple different ways to dissect that, right? So one is differentiating between polyamory and swinging, right? Where in the swinging community, it's about having multiple sex partners, right? That's the point of swinging is to be able to have sex with multiple people, right? And swinging is a form of ethical non-monogamy. People say a couple consents to having sex with another couple, right? So they're now having a sexual relationship that's outside of their marriage, but they consent to it and that's fine, right? But it's not really about building a loving relationship. It's about having greater access to sexual pleasure and satisfaction, which there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. As long as people are consenting to it and they're taking care of their health, they're being responsible, not exposing people to risk without them being aware, I have absolutely no problem with swinging. So polyamory is different, so polyamory has the intent of actually building meaningful relationships beyond sexual intercourse or beyond sexual interaction, right? And so a lot of people do, sort of judge and say, oh, wow, say this black woman who says that she's polyamorous is just a hoe or a slut, she just wants to be able to go around. And are we allowed to curse on this show?
Yes, please
Okay. So
do.
she just so she just won't go around and fuck everybody, right? And that's not necessarily the case. There are people who are asexual who are in polyamorous relationships. They may express romantic feelings in different ways. They may have somebody that they just cuddle with, or they may enjoy holding hands with this particular person or kissing, right? But they don't actually engage in sexual intercourse at all. Or they may express affection through mutual massage or whatever the case may be, right? People have non-sexual ways to show affection. And there are people who aren't sexual at all, but are still polyamorous, right? So the idea that polyamory is centered around sex is misinformed, right? So there are people who have multiple romantic and multiple intimate relationships, but romance and intimacy can have meaning to people beyond sex, right?
Yes, I'm so glad you're bringing that to everybody's attention, because we had an episode on slut shaming, and that is exactly what happens. But it's very interesting that you said, females that want to be in multiple relationships or practice polyamory and their slut shame and like, oh, she just wants to fuck everybody. She's a slut. She's a hoe. She's this, that, and the other. But men don't get that. Men don't get that at all.
To an extent, I do think that black men have been over-sexualized in, the history of America, and there is a bit of a stigma against, I would say in particular married black men who are polyamorous, and this idea that, people are just trying to fuck, and it's just and there are instances of this though. There's definitely, a subset of the poly community who is just people who, claim to be poly, but they're really just trying to fuck, and they use it as an excuse to hurt people and to not really care for people's emotions and things like that. So, that kind of stuff does happen. And so I do think in a sense though that, black men have been over sexualized, and when people hear that like a black man is poly, they typically default to he just trying to go around and fuck everybody without being accountable or being responsible or any of those things. Or, you know, this man just wants to be able to have sexual access to women without being a provider or, you know, without being a protector or without bringing anything into her life except her dick, right?
Right.
So I do think that there are stereotypes that exist on both sides, but I definitely think that black women, you know, get the draw the shorter straw, you know, in terms of society's
Always.
judgment. But
Always. I'm
yeah.
going to speak up.
Yeah.
This, but the fact is that the black woman, it's always the black woman, because if I was a European white woman, it's like, oh no, it's acceptable, right?
You might have a talk show, you know?
So I'm glad that you brought up, because I actually read The Sex at Dawn too by Christopher Ryan. It's a good read. I read it and really, really could kind of relate and started to meditate and get in my head and think about certain things. And that was mainly because I practiced Tantra. So it was a good read for me for that. And I definitely, you have brought up online groups. I know in DC they had the DC Polyamory TNG. I don't know if that's still around. It used to be called the Chesapeake Polyamory Network. I don't know if you remember
Okay, definitely,
that. Yeah, and they changed the name, I think in 2010 or so. They end up going out on their own and now it's the DC Polyamory TNG.org or whatever. Did you ever belong to a group?
So there's a Black and Poly website, and there's a bunch of Black and Poly Facebook groups and meetups and things like that. And that's been a community which has been really helpful for me because it centers the experience of Black people within polyamory. So there are a lot of, you know, larger and more diverse groups and networks of polyamorous people, and they have their place, and I have, you know, respect for them. But for me, the most helpful has really been, you know, seeing how polyamory intersects with blackness and the experience of being black here in the U.S. So I really enjoy the Black and Poly Facebook group, and they do have meetups in the D.C. area as well. I think once a month there's a Black and Poly meetup in D.C. So that's been great because people get to share, you know, their stories, the challenges that they're having, ask questions, you know, learn from people who have been, you know, practicing polyamory for a long time and have different insights to share. And it's also a great place that collects an online place for collecting different resources, you know, whether it's lists of books that are helpful to read, articles, you know, things that come up in the media. It's a great reference. It's a great place for references, and it's just a good resource of good people to be able to bounce ideas off of.
That's
It's
good.
not meant to be like a dating site. It's not like go on there to find, you know, whatever you're looking for, but it's a great community, you know, to learn from and to be a part of. So that's been really helpful for me.
That's good. I mean, because everybody needs that. It's like when you start to feel like, okay, because of your friends and your family and the people that you normally have in your circle may not understand, may not agree. However, you're starting to become conscious of who you are, you know, and so therefore you have, I guess you can say, kind of like a support group, you know,
Yeah,
that's out there.
A lot of people will come on and they have, you know, like different questions. Like a common, something common that I think I'd see would be, hey, you know, my wife just came to me and said that she's interested in open relationships, and I really don't know what to do or where to start. So I'm just looking for some advice and some input, right? Or, you know, me and my girlfriend are interested in finding our third. We want to find that perfect woman for us. So that's a common, you know, post that that you'll see. Those tend to be like the two ways that people wind up coming on
And
coming
the
up to the
thing is,
group for the first time.
exactly, and I kind of want to go there a little bit with you on that because I actually did do that with my husband. I am recently divorced, but I did go to my husband. We were not intimate for some time, and I started to question like, Is something going on? You know, are you having certain issues? Is there someone else? I mean, of course, a woman being in a long-term marriage will start to ask these questions. And I didn't want anything to affect my self-esteem. So, but also at the same time, I was starting to, I mean, the simple fact that he knew me from a young woman when we met to me becoming a woman, I was 19 when we met. So becoming a woman, you start to figure out who you are as a woman, right? So I had no problems with going to him and asking, would you like to be in an open marriage? And I wasn't intimidated by it. I wasn't threatened by it. I had no fear in my heart, nothing. However, I still don't know what was going on with him. He never communicated that with me. However, he said, no, if we were going to do that, we might as well get a divorce. So how does one move beyond that? I mean, at the end of the day, it did end in divorce for us, but how do you move on from that?
Yeah,
because you said a lot of people ask that question.
Yeah. You know, so a lot of times it really, it comes down to the couple. It comes down to their individual needs. And I think part of the beginning is really finding out what those needs really are. You know, why is it that marriage is meaningful for people? You know, and does that meaning still persist even if other people, you know, are introduced in a loving way into their lives? If the meaning is still there, then perhaps the marriage can still be there as well, right?
Right.
That marriage means something different for everyone. In terms of moving forward, you know, I always suggest people learn more. Oh, excuse me one second. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I don't hear you coughing and sneezing and doing all that, so
I keep putting the phone on mute so you can't tell. And I'm just But I definitely encourage people before they take action, before they say, well, you know, there's this woman at my job who, you know, I want to take out on a date or something like that. You know, first and foremost, you know, talk to your partner, understand what your respective needs are, what your desires are, you know, what makes you feel loved, what makes you feel comfortable, what makes you feel safe, you know, and talk to other people who are polyamorous about their experiences, right? Check out these online communities, read some books together. There's a book that I do recommend. I think it's a book that's very helpful. I'll caveat by saying that the primary author of the book has been called out for his unethical behavior and for not living according to the principles espoused in the book. And so many in the poly community are no longer supporting this author. But I personally do think that this particular book is called More Than Two, A Practical Guide to Ethical Non-Monogamy, is a good conversation piece for couples. Each chapter presents different questions that, you know, that people in relationships can talk to each other about to better understand how it is that they see relationships. A lot of these things are subconscious for us, right? The way that we see love, the way that we see affection, the way that we see commitment, the way that we see desire, a lot of these things are subconscious for us. And so having structured dialogue can be helpful at times. And I think that this book does a pretty good job of helping people to have that dialogue. So I do recommend it. I also recommend that if there's a way to, you know, I think the community is still working on how it is that everyone can get justice out of so that the economic benefit of people continuing to buy the book. So that's an ongoing issue, but I do think that the book is helpful, even though I have some reservations around recommending it. But I think that couples should talk to each other, better understand their needs before they take action, before they decide to go see somebody else or whatever the case may be. I think it's best to understand themselves first and what it is that they're trying to get out of their experience.
Right, exactly. Now, I want to get back to, is there a difference between an open relationship and a poly arrangement, or is it pretty much the same thing?
I mean, at the end of the day, I think it all comes down to semantics. You know, there's a lot of vocabulary that people use to describe their situation, you know, and situations can be very unique. I think what's really important is that, you know, people people design their relationships to meet their needs, period. I think that's what's really important, you know, is understand what your needs are and make a relationship that suits you, right?
Right, exactly. But
So
that
some
entails
community can
communication.
exactly, yeah, and knowledge of self, you know, you got to know yourself to be able to do that, right? So some
Right.
communities use polyamory, some other communities use open relating. From my understanding, what some people call open relating, I think in the polyamorous community would be referred to as relationship anarchy, which is basically, you know, the best way to describe that, I think, would be to say that, you know, people, you know, own their relationships to themselves, you know, and they choose their relationships at will, and other people get to choose how they react to that. You know, other people get to choose whether or not that's something that, you know, they want to participate in, but, you know, the choices of other people don't necessarily let's see. Okay, so I'd say that people don't necessarily feel the need to be restricted based on the preferences of others. More so, they choose the relationships for themselves, the ones that work best for them, and other people get to choose whether or not that suits them, right? So it's basically removing like duty and obligation out of the relationship dynamic. So, you know, oftentimes in a marriage, right? You know, people say, well, I'm married. These are the rules associated with the marriage. And so my behavior is restricted for the sake of pleasing my partner, right? I just, you know. So somebody more so in an open relationship sort of scenario would say, well, no, I'm going to choose to do what makes me happy, right? And, you know, my partners then have the opportunity to choose how they're going to react to that, you know, but I'm not necessarily going to present myself as being something other than who I am, or present my needs as being something other than what they are.
Right.
Right. So I don't necessarily know if I'm representing that the best way. I don't necessarily, you know, identify as somebody who is open relating, right?
Right.
So somebody else may have a different interpretation of that, but, you know, I think that fundamentally the idea is removing like duty and obligation from the relationship and just being able to maneuver in a way that's free. And that
Right.
resonates most for the individual, right? So their primary partner is themselves, right? Their primary responsibility is to their own self and to their happiness, you know? Some people will say that
No.
that's selfish. Some people say
Right.
that that's self-care, you know, and that
Right.
you can't pour from an empty cup. And so when you prioritize yourself, you're actually able to give your best to other people, right? So there's always two sides to every coin.
Yeah.
You know, it works for some people, doesn't work for other people.
No, but I like how, but I actually like how you broke that down. To me, that was very clear. I understood that. Hopefully, our followers understand that. But I like how you said removing duties and obligations, and that and self care. I heard self care come out of that, and a lot of people tend to not do that. You know, I mean, in a way, relationships kind of are very selfish. You know, so it's like sometimes you got to be selfless, or you have to be selfless and compromising on certain things, but selfish and focusing on your happiness and your self-care so you can be a better partner, you know,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's what people tend to not do. So I like how you broke that down. It was very clear to me. But I want to get into something that when, because I have these kind of conversations with my girlfriends, they don't practice or believe in what I believe, or they don't think the way I think, which is great because it's like, you know, I'm who I am, they're who they are, no, you know, judgment free, and that's how I always enter into my conversations. So something that constantly comes up is when I explain to them what this is about, they always bring up, well, what happens when trust is broken? Or no, let me back up a little bit. The first question is, how is trust broken? Or can you actually cheat in a polyamorous relationship? And I'm like, yeah, you can because you're not understanding. But I'll let you explain or answer that for our followers.
Yeah, I think that, you know, ethical non-monogamy is centered on the idea of ethics, right? And open and honest communication, being able to give people the information that they need to make the best decision for themselves. If you withhold information from other people, then it's no longer ethical. So yes, people in polyamorous relationships can cheat. If you have an understanding with your partner that you discuss certain things and then you choose not to share those things, then you're cheating.
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah. If we meet somebody new, you know, we're going to talk about it, or, you know, we'll have a conversation before we have sex with somebody, or whatever the case may be, whatever it is that, you know, the boundaries that work for your given relationship, if you agree to those things and then you break the agreement, then you are being dishonest. And you
exactly.
So it's just like any other relationship. You know, the difference is in a standard, you know, heteronormative monogamous relationship in America, right? The rules of the relationship are defined by society at large, you know, and they're pretty much agreed on. People don't need to necessarily go into a marriage and specify all of the things that, you know, are acceptable or not acceptable, because we tend to have cultural expectations around what marriage means, right? In a polyamorous setting, people are free to choose the boundaries of their relationship, to say what works for them and what doesn't work for them. For instance, most people would agree that if you are in a monogamous marriage and you have sex with somebody else, you've cheated, right?
Right.
But on an individual level, somebody could say, I can't believe that you went to the movies with him. You know, we were supposed to see that movie together, you know, or you watched that Netflix show with her. That was our show.
Right, right.
And so, right. So for people, you know, who like, monogamy can mean so many different things.
Different things.
So many different people, right?
Right.
And so the rules and the boundaries of the relationship still tend to be individual, right? And so I think, you know, within polyamory, people are just more so encouraged to be explicit, you know, and communicate what those boundaries are.
Right.
And to define the boundaries that work for their specific relationship. And those boundaries could be different in one relationship than they are in another. Right.
The
big thing is that they're agreed upon and they're respected. And it's not meant to be hard and fast rules that never change either, because the reality is that people's needs and their desires change too.
Right.
And so, you know, like, for instance, I've been in relationships where boundaries have been, you know, violated. And that's a really strong word. Right. You know, but instead of saying, oh, my gosh, we had an agreement, this has been broken, now it's time for the relationship to end, which is typically how monogamy works. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it becomes an opportunity for personal growth, right? You get to say, well, okay, what is it about, you know, the situation that encouraged you to do something other than what it is that you agreed to, right? What motivated you, right? Okay, why does that motivation exist, you know? Is this a rule or this boundary, whatever you want to call it, is this still suitable to you? Do you think that this is something that should change? If so, in what way, right? So I think, like, monogamy has these rules and these expectations. Infidelity typically means the relationship just has to end, right?
Right.
In polyamory, you know, and this may not be a universal thing, but in my experience, right, you know, you set boundaries because they help to make you comfortable. A lot of people just want to know that their relationship is respected. You know, some people want a sense of stability and longevity, right? And their boundaries help them to feel those things in the context of the relationship. But our needs and our desires change. We may become more comfortable. You know, maybe after a couple of years, they don't feel like they need the same boundary in order to understand that the relationship is stable, right? So things may change. And so it's important that people continue to communicate about their boundaries, you know, about their needs and their desires, especially as they change over time. And I think that's something that's a bit different,
you
know, in polyamorous relationships, right?
And it feels like, I mean, the more you talk about this, it's like, oh my gosh, I need to be in a poly relationship. But because at the end of the day, one of the other questions I was going to, I'm glad you brought up boundaries, because I was going to ask, what if boundaries or rules were not clearly defined, you know, going into it, which it sounds to me like that's where you have to start. You have to start with clearly defining those boundaries and rules, because I was going to say, well, if you cross the line, then do you start over, or do you get punished with a spank, or is it kind of similar to a monogamy relationship that you break up or you get divorced? but you're clearly just stating that you have to, again, communication is key. You have to create those boundaries and kind of the, I guess, the rules to the arrangement. It's kind of like, this is how we're going to conduct our relationship.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, you know, and for many people, the spanking is in the punishment. So, you know, that's very effective too.
And that's but, why I said spanking, BDSM. I was like, do I get a spank? Because maybe that's what I want. You know.
You know. That can be healthy in many relationships. But you know, I think that the big thing is setting the boundaries that work for the particular, you know, relationship. And so for some people that could mean, you know, like some people say, you know, oh, we're married, you know, if you're going to start dating another woman, you know, being intimate with another woman, I want to have a conversation with her first.
Right.
You know, because it's important for me that she knows that we're married and that she respects our relationship, and she's not just trying to come in and wreck our home or whatever the case may be, you know.
Right.
Other people may say, you know, it's important to me that, you know, if you're going to, you know, be intimate with somebody else, that you're not going to be fluid bonded, you know, that you'll use proper protection when you're intimate so that, you know, we don't have to worry about having any sort of issues with expressing our intimacy with each other. Right.
So
people set all types of boundaries. You know, part of the problem with that is sometimes that introduces privilege and hierarchy.
Right.
Other aspects of, you know, so it's like we're the married couple, right?
Right.
And so what happens in our relationship is what's most important. And this other person is basically just an accessory to your life that's disposable, right? You know, so we need to have trust and we need to have communication and, you know, or, you know, yeah, I'm the husband, so if you texting this guy, I want to see what y'all talking about, you know. But at the same time, you know, the boyfriend doesn't get to see the text messages between the husband and you know what I'm saying? So, and the wife, right? So sometimes these boundaries that people set, they can introduce hierarchy, they can introduce privilege. And so it's often important to check, you know, and to see if the boundaries in the relationship are really healthy, or
right,
if they're actually just, you know, sort of pampering people's insecurities, right?
Right.
You know? So that's really, because I think what's important is in polyamory, if the idea is really to have multiple loving relationships, then people need to be respected as people, you know, fully as people, you know. Like, I know that sort of in the non-ethical monogamous world of cheating, right? People have the primary partner and they got the side chick over here.
You know, right, exactly.
Right? You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, like the side chick never really gets to be a full person in the relationship, right?
Right.
They never really get to have all of their needs met or even respected. You know, they're permanently placed in a situation where they're number two. And
right,
for me, you know, as somebody who doesn't subscribe to hierarchy, I see that as being problematic, right?
I do too.
If one person's needs always trump the needs of somebody else,
right?
And in my opinion, that's not necessarily ethical, right?
Right.
And so these are questions that people should ask when they're exploring their relationships, when they're talking about their boundaries and the things that work for them and designing their relationships. You know, it's important to consider, you know, how is it that my boundaries impact other people? You know, is this situation really ethical? You know, why do I want this particular boundary? Why is it that I want to impose a restriction on another person, right?
And what it is. I love it. It's like it's making you stop and think about what you actually want and need. And it also makes you start to, if you're doing something unethical, to start to question yourself. You know, I mean, because you brought up what I'm hearing is a lot of insecurity. So it makes you face things that you probably knew about yourself or you suppressed it. You know, do you have jealousy problems? Do you have trust issues? Are you insecure? Are you possessive, obsessive? I mean, it starts to make you look, and only if you're actually, I would say, dealing with it. So it's one thing to say, oh my gosh, but does everybody recognize that?
You
know?
I don't think that everybody, I don't think that everybody does. And the other thing too is if you're in a loving relationship, it's not just making people feel bad because they have insecurities, because we all do, right? So
Right.
somebody's like, well, I don't want you to do this. And it's just like, oh, well, the only reason that you want that is because you're insecure. It's like, yeah, of course you can always say that to somebody, right?
Right,
And if that's how you choose to manage the relationship, you know, it may not work out the best. You know,
exactly.
so I think that there's nothing wrong with accommodating people. You know, there's nothing wrong with being loving and compassionate towards people, being understanding. You know, and it's so, you know, there's also the stigma that polyamory, you know, and commitment are not compatible with each other. But there are lots of people, including myself, who are in long-term committed polyamorous relationships, right? And so, you know, if you want things to work out in the long term, then sometimes you do, you make compromises and negotiations often in the short term to make sure that a relationship can be stable and healthy in the long term, right? And that's true of any committed long-term relationship. So, you know, some people don't, though. Some people just say, nope, if this person doesn't see things the way that I do, I'm comfortable with ending the relationship and I can find somebody whose views align more with mine. And that's okay too. People are free to choose the relationships that work for them, right?
Right. Right, exactly. So I don't know if you ever, I don't know if it was Showtime. I don't know if it was Showtime or HBO, but they have a show called Polyamory. I don't know if it's a poly lifestyle, polyamory, but it's on Showtime. Have you watched that?
I'll be honest and say I'm not much of a TV person. So chances are I haven't seen it.
Well, it's very interesting. So I don't know if they're in the second or third season of it, but it actually has like, I mean, the second season that I watched, because you see, I watch everything, I explore, and especially if I'm looking through Netflix or HBO or Showtime, and something piques my interest, and a lot of times it's around sex. So I'll click on it, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna watch a few episodes, and so it was one relationship that they were following. And of course, I will say this, that most of the people that they followed were either in California or New York. So that's one thing I'm like, why is that? But the one relationship that they were following, it was a married couple, which you had described, and they end up bringing in a female. But what was interesting is the husband end up bringing her to the wife. And I guess having a meeting. So it's like I kind of want to give our followers like a little bit of how different these type of relationships look. So that was one relationship. And then the second one that they were following was actually two different couples. So you have brought up swinging. So to me, it was kind of like, oh, that was a swinging situation. But then as I was watching it as you describe, which is great, this loving relationship that transpired, they end up, one couple end up moving in with the other couple. So then it was like they all were in the relationship. However, whenever they would engage in their intimacy or have their group night or whatever their play or whatever they called it was mainly the two wives would, play with each other. Or they would swap wives or partners. However, the husbands did not engage. But then what was interesting is that they had these two couples that were living together and they were in this polyamorous relationship. But then the husbands, because one of the husbands was bisexual, so he ended up having a male partner or relationship outside of the group or the poly group. And then the other husband that was heterosexual had other females. What do you say to that?
Gotcha. I say if it makes them happy and they're able to do it in a way that works for them, then more power to them. I think that it is not easy at all in this world to find love and to make a relationship work. To do both of those things, you know, is not difficult. So anybody who does that, say more power to you, right?
Right.
With that particular arrangement, you know, I do think it does bring up some things that people do get confused about sometimes if they're new, you know, to poly. Right. And like the idea of a V versus a triad, right? So a lot of times you see, like, the couple, the man and the woman who are looking for a woman, typically a bisexual woman, to come and quote unquote complete their relationship, right? So they're a couple and they're looking for a triad. They want a relationship where all three of the parties are intimate and romantic with each other, right? Some people refer to that as unicorn hunting, right?
Right.
Because
I've heard that term.
it's very rare. Yeah, it's very rare that a couple is going to find the perfect woman who loves them both equally, is sexually attracted to both of them in an equal way, and is just gonna magically make their relationship whole and happy. Right.
Right.
It doesn't typically happen like that. So oftentimes people wind up in a V where you have one person who has a relationship with these two different people, but the two different people, their two partners, don't have a relationship with each other. Right.
Right.
So so it's like 3 points, they make a V, and that common point, is one person, but on the two ends, those people aren't having a relationship with each other, right? You can extend that to many different types of relationship configurations where, not everybody in the relationship has to be engaged with everybody else in the relationship, right? So there's a great diversity of options and configurations. I think of it like chemistry. You got protons, you got electrons, you got neutrons, you got all types of different particles, right? Some of them come together and form different bonds, right? And you have many different molecules that you can create, and most of them are stable, right? Some of them break down. Some of them break down in ways that are very explosive, right? But in
Right.
general, there are many different ways to bring, these particles together to create stable bonds
I
with
love
each
how
other,
you're
which is
bringing
really the
science
core of human
into
relationships. So, I'm a
Right.
scientist.
I love how I know you're a scientist. That's why I said I love how you're bringing science into this. It actually makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, so it makes sense to me. But yeah, so there's tons of different configurations, different things that work for different people.
Right.
Oh, can I can I, I
Now,
want I want to speak on just one thing real quick too, and that's
okay.
this idea of the relationship escalator, right? Because eventually, the two different couples, they got together, they got to know each other, and eventually they moved in together, right? And
Right.
so there's this concept in polyamory that we call the relationship escalator, which is like there's this predefined course for how it is a relationship is supposed to progress and what it means for a relationship to be making progress over time, right? You meet somebody, you date, you get to know each other, you move in together, you get married, you have kids, you retire, you take care of the grandkids, whatever the case may be. It's like this trajectory in our culture, which basically says this is how a relationship is supposed to go. Right. And so even in the example that you provided on that show, it seemed like people were still on that relationship escalator. They still had an idea of what it meant for their relationship to be moving forward. They were going to become more entangled, in their lives. More of their lives were going to become entangled with each other over time. And not everybody is on this relationship escalator. That doesn't have to be, the metric by which the success of a relationship is measured, right? There are many other ways to determine whether or not a relationship is successful, other than whether or not people wind up moving in together and spending the rest of their lives together until one of them dies, right?
Right.
So that's just something to keep in mind too, is that it's important to understand, whenever two people or more people, decide to start a relationship with each other, I do think it's also important for them to understand, what it is that they want, if it's longevity that they want, what exactly does that look like? If they want to cohabitate with somebody or intertwine their finances together, what does that mean in terms of the resources they have available to
Right.
maintain relationships with other people outside of that particular dynamic, right? So I've heard it said in poly that love is infinite, but resources are not. Our time, our energy, our money, our attention, our affection, our emotions, our ability to deal with the emotions of other people, these things are not infinite, right? And so we all can only practically manage with so many relationships. So it's important to understand, you know, what our expectations are and what our limitations are when we choose our relationships with other people.
I mean, you broke that down. That was so clear. One last question I want to ask you, only because, you know, I follow other people that are in polyamorous relationships, and I have conversations with people, and I just want our followers to understand, because I'm sure they're going to have questions. So I'm trying to think of every question that they will ask, and we could possibly answer them, as well as they can DM us. So, and reach out to us if they have any questions, and we can answer those as well. But one thing that came up was, you know, I know that you legally can't have multiple husbands. However, this one young lady said, last night my boyfriend asked my husband if he could have my hand in marriage. After a brief man-to-man chat, they came out smiling together, and we spent the rest of the night celebrating. I can't explain how excited I am. We're getting married this summer. I know that certain people that we follow on Instagram have, you know, they've identified, and they said, oh, I have husband number one, I have husband number two, and so forth. And do you feel that, you know, people ask, how can you do that legally? Do you feel that most people that are involved in these type of relationships are not that religious? Maybe they're more spiritual, or also they don't like involving the government? Because I know me personally, because of my experience and at this point, I feel like that piece of paper messes up things, right? So my whole thing is, you know, for me to say and do the same thing, whether I sign a piece of paper or agreement or not, love is love, right? So what do you say to people saying, well, now you have husband number one, husband number two, the men are talking to each other, and then you're getting married?
Well, you know, there could be Mormon. Yeah, that's a possibility, you know. And if not, then I don't know how they are legally marrying more than two people in the U.S., Europe, or most countries in the world, you know. Because, again, most countries that even do allow multiple marriage, it's typically just a man having multiple wives. And that's because the idea of marriage is a very loaded, you know, legal, political, you know, economic construct within most societies and cultures, right? And there's a lot that comes with it. Like, for instance, here in the U.S., marriage influences parental rights, insurance policies, you know, taxation, hereditary wealth, visitation rights at hospitals, all types of different things depend on marital status, right? So it's very difficult to navigate all of those things, you know, with multiple partners. And there are definitely lawyers, and there are accountants, and there are therapists and psychologists and all types of people who specialize in providing services for polyamorous people, for managing polyamorous.
I didn't know
families,
that.
Right? You know. Yeah. So it's it takes some networking to find the right people often, but there are people who have experience in dealing with these different things. But legal marriage in the U.S.
It's not allowed. It's illegal.
No, it's not. And the other thing to mention too is that polyamory is not a protected class either, right? And so people can be discriminated against legally, you know, in terms of employment, you know,
health care
to other. Yeah, services that, you know, we grant in society, you can be legally discriminated against for being polyamorous. If your boss says, I don't like the fact that you have two wives, you're fired, right? You know, we don't have legal protection for polyamorous people, for kink, for BDSM, or for, you know, other types of, you know, subgroups within the U.S. So that's something to keep in mind. So for that reason, a lot of people are not very vocal or very open about their relationship orientation, and
right.
A lot of people do shy away from legal marriage because because of those things, you know. I think we've made a lot of progress in terms of things like rights for LGBTQIA, you know, individuals and their communities. Polyamory does not have the same social movements behind it. We haven't, you know, protected the human rights of polyamorous people the way that we've protected the human rights of people who identify, you know, in other ways. So that's something, that is something to keep in mind as people are contemplating this, you know, if this is something that they're interested in, is that there are legal and public and social and economic ramifications. So it's always something to weigh. You know, but I think that, you know, everyone in the fight for self-determination and for equal rights has sort of come to this place in history, or is yet to come to this place in history. And the thing that I think about the United States of America is that over time we have shown that our legal and our social frameworks do expand to include more people over time. You know,
right.
It's never easy, and it's never quick.
Right.
But in the end, we do have a society that is willing to stretch to include more people over time, and that's something that's encouraging.
I love it. I love how we touched on everything. I think that our followers for Foreplay Matters definitely has a clear understanding of what polyamory, poly lifestyle, polyamorous is. And I want to thank you for joining me today in this very interesting conversation. So what we normally do at the end of our show is we normally give like a takeaway. So what is your takeaway for our followers?
Learn more about yourself and interact with other people who, you know, or ask questions. Basically, learn more about yourself and ask questions. It's the best way to, you know, to better understand your wants and your needs and to figure out how to move forward in a way that's going to work for you. Also, disclaimer, I don't consider myself to be an expert on poly, and I know that my experience doesn't represent the experience of all people who are poly as well. So, you know, I hope I did a okay job of helping people to expand their awareness a bit, but I'm sure you'll find, you know, thousands of people who disagree with everything I said. So feel free to go out, talk to more people, and to learn more.
Exactly. The main thing is, like you said, knowledge, knowledge itself, and communication is key. So, but I want to also expound on something that you said as far as communication is key, but open and honest communication. And also to start to achieve your happiness and start to focus on your self-care. So I'm going to leave you, Foreplay Matter followers, with that. Tune in, you know, every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Today is hump day, so it's Wednesday. So tune in at 7 p.m. on Spotify, Anchor, YouTube, Apple Podcasts. You can DM us, and you can reach us for Foreplay Matters at Secret Society Life. Emmanuel, what is your Instagram and your information so our followers can reach out to you as well?
I'm at Rasaneb, R-A-S-E-N-E-B, at Rasaneb on Instagram, Rasaneb Wellness Services on Facebook, or anywhere else on social media.
Yeah, and I think you can also type in your name, Emmanuel Taylor, and I think it'll come up.
Okay.
So I thank you. Yeah, good to know. So thank you for joining us, Emmanuel. And we definitely, what you say in the disclaimer, we definitely tell our followers, this is all speaking from experience. That's what makes this unique. It's education and entertainment, and it's information. And we're just here to share our experiences to help those in our community. So with that being said, I say au revoir to all and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.